Myself and my associate producer, Melissa Hirsch, we are kind of just scouring the news and all of these different history websites, historians, and we put out a big call out to our viewers a few months ago of what stories they wanted to know and or they wanted us to produce. And one of the things that we came across was the Lavender Scare, which was this era in the 1950s when federal employees were being pushed out of government jobs because of their sexual orientation or their gender identity. We were researching the Lavender Scare. It wasn't underreported because there was a lot of information out there about it. There was a PBS documentary about it. But through this event, we were looking at what sort of parallel things happened, maybe more locally. And we came across the story of the Johns Committee happening in Florida. I was shocked because I had never heard about an official committee being formed with that explicit goal of removing LGBTQ students and professors.
And how would you describe what the Johns Committee was and who was in it and what it was doing?
So the Johns Committee, they were informally called the Johns Committee, but officially they were the Florida Legislative Investigation Committee. And they were made up of a group of state lawmakers, and they were headed by a senator named Charlie Johns. And their explicit goal initially was to attack integration efforts in Florida. So that was kind of what they were at in the beginning. They were looking at the civil rights movement was picking up steam, Brown v. Board of Education, that decision had just come down, and they did not like the way that Florida was progressing towards integration. So they created this committee to sort of go after civil rights organizers by trying to tie them to communism, because it's a complicated history, but what's important about the committee is that it stems from this very unique political moment, because we have the civil rights movement cropping up, but also we have the Red Scare, the second Red Scare that was happening, and
And
they
it
tried to use the Red Scare to go after the civil rights movement.
all centered around this Florida legislator, Charlie Johns, and he was actually the Florida governor for a very brief time. But who was this guy? How did he amass so much power in Tallahassee?
Yeah, that's a great question. He was a rural politician. He grew up between Gainesville and Jacksonville, I believe, and in Stark, Florida. And he amassed a following because of what we know as modern day gerrymandering. He was part of this group called the Pork Chop Gang, and they had immense power in Florida because the legislative districts had not been drawn in a way where it reflected the amount of people that had moved to urban areas. So rural parts of Florida had a lot of power at that time. And he and other senators used that power to kind of push through this committee.
So the Johns Committee was formed at the height of the McCarthyism era and the Red Scare nationwide. But how did lawmakers equate homosexuality with the spread of communism?
It took some rationalizing, interesting rationalizing on their part. But the thinking was that if you were part of the LGBTQ community, you could be blackmailed by communists, and people could use your perceived sexual orientation or your gender identity. They could use those things against you, and communists could try to help. Communists could use you to infiltrate the U.S. government by holding your secrets against you.
This committee used all sorts of tactics, as you pointed out, to get people to reveal their sexuality. Tell me about one or two of the more egregious ones that you found.
We found the most shocking to me were when we spoke to Art Coppelston, one of the people who was targeted by the Johns Committee. A couple of their most shocking tactics were, one, they would stalk students. And again, these are kids in college. They're 18 to in their early 20s. And they would stalk and intimidate them. And what happened to Art was they also had sort of informants on campus. They would hire other students to act as informants and tell on their peers. And if they noticed anything out of the ordinary or what they called sexual deviation or moral deviation. But what happened with Art is they actually hired someone to be his roommate and to act as his roommate while watching him, trying to check if anything was out of the ordinary with him.
This is a cut that we got from your piece. This is from Art Coppleston describing the process of interrogation by the committee. This, again, from your Missing Chapter mini documentary.
How could I forget the first time? I was in a class, and there was suddenly the sounds of these very loud-sounding boots clunking across the floor, and there was a campus policeman standing at the head of the class, and he just shouted out my last name. And he just said, come with me. And I was put in the back seat of a squad car. And we went directly to the police station. And the interrogation room was one table in the middle of the room and a tape recorder in the middle of the table. And there was even the light bulb on a string hanging right above the tape recorder. I'm sorry. This hasn't happened to me in years. Right off the bat, they said, we know that you're gay.
Tell me more about these interrogations, and where were they doing them? Was it just the police?
Yeah, so it was the police, but also it was university police officers as well, and a hired investigator by the committee. And the two groups would work together. They would do these interrogations in motels, in hotels, in these dark rooms, and they had no legal options for the students present. So this was before Miranda laws were a thing. But they, It was very scary. They were taken off campus for these interrogations.
This sounds like entrapment. Was the Johns Committee basically performing entrapments?
Absolutely. They had people literally waiting in bathrooms at the county courthouse, at other locations in the cities that they were conducting these investigations. They waited in bathrooms to see if gay men would come in and act on what they called sexual deviation.
I'm speaking with Ranjini Chakraborty, video producer for Vox News. The latest episode of the Vox series Missing Chapter explores the history of the Johns Committee in Florida. They targeted LGBTQ students and professors at Florida schools in the 50s and 60s. Now you can see the mini doc on our social media at WLRN Sundial. So in the course of interrogating a person, they'd find this person to be gay or having engaged in homosexual activity. What would the state do then?
That's a good question. For the most part, they would intimidate them with that information, with that piece of knowing that they were gay or lesbian, and they would hold that above them until they resigned. So they would force people to resign from their positions as professors, as staff at the university, or in their positions as students.
So that professors could lose their jobs.
Absolutely. Professors did lose their jobs. At the University of Florida alone, I believe 70 students and professors lost their positions. And we don't know a lot about how widespread it was, but we do know from the documents that at one time they were investigating 300 people at once.
A decade after the Johns Committee got started, they released a thing called the Purple Pamphlet. What was in that pamphlet, and how did this ultimately unravel this organization?
It was this funny irony with the Purple Pamphlet, because now it's become this sort of cult figure. The Purple Pamphlet was meant to be sort of an informational pamphlet on the dangers of homosexuality. And what they ended up using, these graphic images of gay men in restrooms and these graphic images of young boys, because they tried to connect homosexuality with pedophilia. And they had even a glossary of terms in this book of what they thought were sort of the gay slang terms at the time. But they tried to make it an informational pamphlet about the community and sort of scare people into what they were about. But what ended up happening was exactly the opposite of what they wanted. It sort of blew up in the committee's face.
Let me get this straight. They had images of children, so basically had child porn in this pamphlet.
Yeah, I mean, the people called it softcore pornography, and they had images of children that were sexualized, and what they were trying to do is connect it to homosexuality.
Because on the back of this pamphlet was the state seal.
Exactly. It was state-sponsored pornography, essentially.
Was the public aware of the Johns Committee before this pamphlet came out? Did they know what was going on?
The public knew. They weren't conducting these investigations in secret, but it was not widely known. But over the years, more people found out. More people were upset with these activities, and what's important to remember is along the way, they were still trying to take down the NAACP, and they lost a really big case right around the time that they put. That they put out this purple pamphlet. So these two big blows happen at the same time, and that's kind of what crushed them.
More than 50 years later, the state of Florida still hasn't formally recognized the damage caused by this committee. Democrat Representative Evan Jenny wants to change that, and you spoke with him for the piece. Let's take a listen.
It ruined people's lives in the way we'll never truly understand. As a white heterosexual Democrat, I'm kind of the guy that needs to apologize for this currently in the state house.
And he has a bill right now. What does that entail?
Yeah, the bill is pushing for an official, heartfelt state apology to all the lives ruined. And that bill, I believe, was stalled this year. But Evan Jenny, when we spoke to him, has vowed to refile this bill for every year that he remains in office until it gets done.
State Senator Lauren Book has also filed a similar measure in the Senate. But something that Jenny told you in the course of your conversation that was striking, that individuals can still be fired in the state of Florida for being part of the LGBTQ. It's because we're a right-to-work state. Why don't people talk about that more?
Yeah, absolutely. In a lot of ways, we have come so far from the era that the piece centers on. But in so many other ways, we don't have the legal protections that we should. Federally, there's no explicit legal protection against employment discrimination, specifically for discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. So we're missing a lot of these pieces, both federally and in the state of Florida.
You're going back to your conversation with Art. I wondered, what was the sense that you got from him and others you might have spoken with in the course of this reporting? Are they seeking compensation from the state or something else?
Absolutely not. When we spoke to Art, while he appreciates what the apology means, what he much rather wants is some meaningful action that can protect Florida's LGBTQ community, like an employment discrimination law or something like that. But he's not seeking compensation. I think he just wants to prevent this from happening ever again.
So as you pointed out, there was a lot of information available. I mean, it's not like they were hiding. But the challenge is a lot of the people who were part of this, whether they were part of the committee or they were the victims of the committee, not a lot of people are still left alive because it was a long time ago.
We had a lot of trouble finding people. We were looking through these documents. The names were redacted. Almost every historian who wrote a book about this, and we spoke to many, many people who knew about it, but the tricky part was finding people who were still alive to speak about it because it happened 60 years ago now. And we found Art, and we were just shocked with the amount of detail that he remembered, because he remembered this, his interrogations, which happened 60 years ago, as if they were yesterday.
What surprised you most about the Johns Committee?
I'm not necessarily sure that it's surprising that they existed, but I will say it was surprising to have this level of understanding of its lasting effects. After we spoke to Art, towards the end of the video, he mentions that that he is still afraid to be part of the gay community where he lives, and he's still afraid to talk to gay people. And it was just a reminder of how even these things that happened so many decades ago can have lasting effects for generations.